This morning, we had a special meeting on Senate Bill 159, and the primary purpose of it is that we adopted a series of amendments, and the representatives of the landlords asked for an opportunity to address themselves to those amendments, and that's the purpose of this meeting. Now, we adopted these amendments, however, there were two that we adopted in concept and didn't have the actual amendments before us. One was on the 30-day notice for the termination of tenancy, and that's on page 19.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Stanley Church. I'm an attorney. I reside at Route 1, Box 542 of Warrenton, Oregon. Today we're discussing a rewrite of what originally was the Uniform Landlord-Tenant Act drafted by the Commission on Uniform State Laws. And I want to point out that in talking about amendments to Senate Bill 159, which is before you this morning, that we are no newcomers to amending this bill. I sat through two meetings in the city of Chicago called by the National Institute and National Association of Real Estate Boards in April and September of 1972, recognizing that this was somewhat of a social problem and it was going to be faced in practically every state in the United States. The National Association of Real Estate Boards called together a group of some of the most qualified men in the United States in the field of landlord-tenant relationship to study an approach which might be termed a model act, which might be used as a guideline in the various states. Our first effort coming out of the April meeting was a rewrite of the law of Hawaii, which by the time we had it reduced to written form was not acceptable to members of the committee, and we were called back to another session in Chicago in September. Now, by this time, the Uniform Law Commissioners had gone through versions 1, 2, 3, and the final draft of the Uniform Act. And by the time we arrived at the second meeting, the final draft was available. I have here our version of an amendment of this dated August 19, 1972. So I want to make it very clear that we are not coming here as newcomers to amend 159 for certain stated purposes. We've been at it a long time. We've been studying it for 2 years. And we have had available, as I say, expertise from people who really know the landlord-tenant field and attempting to make a decent law out of it. Now, number one, I'm going to make this very clear. That one of our first policy decisions in all our meetings in Chicago was that we had absolutely no intention of defending or protecting the bad landlord, the guy who adamantly refuses to do anything about his property to make it more habitable or to make it safe. On the other hand, we think that there should be some rules. The rules should also provide that the tenant shall have certain obligations as well as the landlord. Certainly no one will suggest that there be any rule change in football that you're going to give one team 6 downs as against the other team 4 downs. And that's what we found in previous landlord-tenant bills before this legislature in 1969 and 1971, that they were giving the tenant groups 6 downs and the landlords 4. Now, addressing myself to the problem before the Oregon legislature, I believe it is unfortunate that we have at the present time 3 bills in this legislature that are technically before 4 committees. There's 159 in this committee. There's 2424, which is in the Consumer Affairs Committee in the House, with subsequent referral to Judiciary. There's House Bill 2542, which is before the Local Government Committee in the House. So here we have the picture of 4 committees holding hearings, studying the problem, and someplace along the line, hopefully, we'll come up with a solution to be fair to everybody. Now, as to the rewrite of Senate Bill 159, which is before us this morning, I might say this. As far as some of the major deletions, where entire sections have been taken out, I would say that if this is what your committee wants, we can go along with them. Where you've deleted complete sections on notice, where you've deleted complete sections on interpretation of the law. However, I think I'm ready to make the statement that in doing so, in some cases, legally, you've emasculated the law. You made it meaningless in certain areas and completely unworkable. But as I say,
where are you going to get at those specifics?
Well, for instance, you've deleted the section on notice.
Where is that? What section? What page is that?
Well, I'm not, as I say, Mr. Chairman, that's on page 5. What's the first thing that happens when a tenant or a landlord comes into your office? If you're an attorney with a problem, the first question you're going to ask him is, what was said? Did he tell you to get out? Did you tell him you were going to leave? What notice did he give you? And all the rest of the way through the bill, they talk about in terms of notice, and yet in this deletion, notice has not been defined. I'm curious as to whether or not your committee, in redrafting this bill, consulted with Mr. James Clark, who was the Uniform Law Commissioner who drafted it. I'm curious as to whether your committee consulted with the Legislative Director of the Uniform Law Commissioner who was here for the first meeting. We recognized in our rewrite of the Landlord-Tenant Bill as put out by the Uniform Law Commissioners that they had worked on this for about 5 years. There were certain sections in it that were excellent, that should be retained, and that they had put them in for very, very definite
what
reasons.
What sections of these that you're talking about, we took out,
pardon?
We think ought to remain. Which sections are you speaking of?
Well, practically through the entire bill. They deleted all of Section 2.
No, I don't understand, see, what you're saying. Let me just say something. The landlords never made one single suggestion on any amendment to this bill that I know of. And when you testified before, you and Mr. Burney both opposed the bill.
Yes, but if
you... And you said that you didn't understand why we needed to have a uniform law, so I don't understand why you're here now.
Mr. Chairman, if you will go back on my written testimony, the last paragraph, I said I would be delighted to suggest amendments to the bill, and yet I was never consulted, it was never suggested that we offer any amendments.
Well, I think you're incorrect. I think you'll find in my statement,
I pointed
out that Mr. Williams is going to be working on this, Mr. Hunsinger is going to be working on this, and we welcome any suggestions you have.
No one ever suggested that I would be welcome. And yet,
I said so on the record at the time you testified.
Well, I'm sorry that we misunderstood one another. But Mr. Williamson, Mr. Hunsinger, never approached Mr. Burney, to my knowledge, and I certainly they never approached.
By way of amendments that you think should.
I was never approached on the way of amendments.
Do you have anything now?
Yes, a lot of them.
Well, let's hear them. That's what the meeting's for.
All right. On page 2, line 6, of the version I have as of this morning. We would suggest that you insert section 6 of 2424 and this was completely deleted out. I will submit all of these amendments to the committee in writing. There are two voluminous this morning to follow them. We will give you by this afternoon our suggestions in writing of
section
how we...
Section 6 is in the existing bill, it's the present law, isn't it? We didn't add anything, is that correct?
I would rather submit them in writing, Mr. Chairman.
Well, fine.
All right, we will do that as of this afternoon.
Senator Carson.
Stan, I don't know what the House bill version is, but is it substantially like the...
That's one of the troubles, Senator Carson. We've got three bills here, and you've got to consider all three of them.
Well, I'm aware of that, but it seems to me your intent is to put back in what is already the law. You certainly don't intend that the law is contrary to the fact that a dispute may be settled.
Well, on this section 2, for instance, what if you've got a landlord residing in Vancouver, Washington, and he doesn't want to be served?
You've deleted
in subsection 2 how you may reach that landlord without a state. It's immaterial to me. This is what Mr. Williams and Mr. Hunsinger want. That's fine.
That's what the committee wants.
As I say, we have no objection. Now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not so sure that this bill is what the committee wants.
I didn't say it was. What I'm trying to point out is not what Mr. Williams and Mr. Hunsinger want, it's what the committee wants.
Oh, I see.
Well, I'm not, as I say, we have no objection to some of these, where they deleted complete sections. If this is the way they want it, that's fine with us.
Where in section 2 does that help in serving the landlord in the state of Washington?
Well, it provides that for an out-of-state landlord where you can't reach him by regular service process.
Section 2?
Section 2, well, it's under section... It's on page 2 on jurisdiction and service process. On the next page, which would be 3 as far as I can see.
We do that under the long-arm statute anyway, don't we? do that under the Oregon long arm statute anyway, can't we?
Well, as I say, we have no objections. If they want to take it out, that's immaterial to us. Now, Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's any question. The hearings on this bill and the hearings that we've heard on 2424, 2542 has not yet had a hearing. There is no more troublesome area in this whole field of landlord-tenant relationship than security deposits. If the attorneys on this committee have had experiences like mine, you usually get a situation where a guy comes into your office, either the landlord or the tenant, and all you've got at stake is about $20 to $25. So he takes $20 to $25 of your time telling you about his problem. And what you ultimately end up with, you end up by telling him to go to small claims court and get it settled, because you can't afford to go over and put it in district court or anything else. So we are suggesting that the section on security deposits, as contained in 159, does not spell out the rules we're talking about. And we would suggest that the security deposit section of House Bill 2424 be inserted. Here, this spells out what a security deposit can be used for. It spells out how the landlord can hold it. It spells out for what reasons the landlord may claim it. It spells out that in case the property is sold, what happens to the security deposit? Does it go to the new owner, or does the present owner keep it? And certainly, if anything comes out of this legislature in landlord-tenant relationship, we feel that the security deposit area should be covered. Now, we'll get over into the section on standards of habitability, which I believe are found on page 11 of the rewritten version. This is the language taken from House Bill 2424, which was adopted from the California Civil Code. This has been in effect down there for any number of years. They tell us it's caused no problem in California. Certainly, having adopted that language in 2424, we have no objection. However, we do have an objection to certain wording in Section H. The original version says that floors, walls, ceilings, stairways, and railings shall be maintained in good repair. The words have been added which are structurally sound. Now, what is the definition of structurally sound? Who is going to make the determination, either at the start of the tenancy, at the conclusion of the tenancy, or when a controversy arises, of what is structurally sound? Does this mean the landlord has got to get an engineer in there to declare at the start of the tenancy that the property is structurally sound? We also object to Section J being added, which is not in the California Civil Code. And this says compliance with provisions of applicable fire codes, material affecting health and safety. Apparently what we're trying to do by adding this language is to make the law the enforcer of codes, which we insist is a matter for the counties and cities to enforce. On page 12, again, this is wording taken from House Bill 2424, and this to us.
Page 12, the original page 12?
Pardon?
You're talking about the original page 12 of the bill?
Page 12 of the rewritten version, as I understand it. It's in type.
What section is it?
I guess it would be section 15. One thing that we felt was entirely lacking in the original... maybe we're talking about two different rewrites.
Is this what you're talking about right there?
No.
The rewrite we're talking about,
we don't have the same one he does, Mr. Chairman.
Did you deliver one to Mr. Bernie?
Well, I just got this one this morning.
Well, we put it in your box, I think it was on Thursday, the same time.
It would be 10, it would be 10C, Mr. Chairman.
Section 10C? Okay, all right.
10C of Section 14. One of the really lacking things that we found in the Uniform Law Bill was the failure of a landlord and tenant in good faith to enter into a situation where the tenant repaired the property. Now, I've been in the rental business for about 20 years. many times a guy will come in and he'll say, well, now you got that living room painted orange. My wife would like to have it painted green. You say, fine. I'll give you a can of paint and you paint it. The guy says, that's great. They should be able to enter into an agreement. So, for that reason, we specified under what circumstances repairs or maintenance could be done by the tenant. Section D was added, however, that the work is not necessary to cure substantial noncompliance with applicable building and housing codes, materially affecting health and safety. Well, now, if a tenant of a property is qualified, let's say that the wiring in the laundry room does not meet code, and the tenant is qualified to make that, bring it up to code, why shouldn't they be able to bring in an agreement between themselves?
You can't do that under most city codes anyway.
Pardon?
You couldn't permit that to be done under most city codes anyway, having anybody other than a licensed electrician do electrical work in your place. Only the owner can do it.
Okay.
So that'd be prohibited by law anyway.
That's your way, but it's...
Well, it's not my way. That's already
well,
the law.
Well, I think the plumbing code says that the work may be done by the owner or his those under his direction.
Well, the plumbing code, that may be correct.
I assume that the same thing is in the electrical code.
Not correct. Only the owner can do it. Everybody else has to be licensed.
In most areas...
Mr. Chairman, I might add that under the electrical code, even the owner can't do it.
Well, okay.
Is that the state electrical code?
State electrical law was amended in 1971.
Even the owner can't do it.
And I've got some amendments for a bill.
Well, let's say in the plumbing area then. Forget the electrical area for the moment. In the plumbing area. May be done by the owner or those under his direction. I'm well aware of that particular section of the code. But we do feel that should be deleted. Now we come to the real heart of our objection to this bill this morning. And that is that under no circumstances can we buy this concept of repair and deduct, which, in my version, is found in, well, it's Section 20, the new version. This is a matter of economics, purely a matter of economics. At any time you stop the cash flow in any business, whether it be the law business, the bottling business, the seed business, or anything else, any time you stop the cash flow and give the tenant the right to make repairs and deduct from the rent, in many cases, this could lead to financial disaster. If a couple are buying a house with their sweat equity, if they're paying $70 a month and getting $75, and all of a sudden, through a hassle, this rent flow is stopped, then it could be a financial disaster to a mom and papa accepting or trying to buy a house through rent equity. I can submit to the committee, if you wish, a story from the National Observer of last summer that showed that $75 million of your money and mine went down the drain on account of rent withholding. This was a housing project in St. Louis, Missouri, which was under subsidy from the federal government and the local government. When the tenants started to withhold rent, the thing went into bankruptcy, and it was blasted down and made into a park. So under no circumstances do we feel that any form of repair and deduct should be in the any law that comes out of this area. And the same goes for Section 20.
Well, you're speaking of Section 20, aren't you?
I'm speaking about Section 20 on page 14.
Yes.
I would suggest that entire section be deleted.
What recourse does the tenant have now? The only recourse he has now, if he complains about anything, then the landlord says, well, the only your recourse is to get out.
Well, so we provided...
The tenant has no recourse whatsoever now, right?
Well, this provides that he's got to go... We provide, first of all, that he's got to go in 2424. He's got to go and make a legitimate complaint. All right, we have deleted all of Section 20 in... Mr. Chairman, I don't... It just seems that this area, you cannot get into a position where, let's say that 40% of the people of Oregon are living in rented houses, you cannot be in a position where the tenant can claim that he can withhold the rent and make repairs. It opens up a whole can of worms, and you mentioned a licensed contractor a moment ago. All right, you get into a situation here. What about protection of the landlord against a lien. Who's going to carry industrial accidents in the case the property is repaired? Who's going to carry liability insurance? And right down the line, who is there going to be a licensed contractor, or is he going to have his brother-in-law do it? There's a whole can of worms opens up here that I think this committee should be well aware of. So we think that there's adequate remedy here. As I say, we did not attempt to protect the bad landlord. On the other hand, we have provided in House Bill 2424 a lot of areas where he can get the repairs done. The same thing in 2424, there's a lot of areas in the retaliatory eviction section, for instance. We've also provided that in there, that the complaint. But he can terminate the tenancy. He can serve notice on the landlord to make the repairs, et cetera, et cetera. But we do not feel, under any circumstances, that he can go ahead on his own and make repairs and possibly subject the property to a lien, possibly subject the landlord to paying industrial accident or other fees, and so on and so forth. The same thing goes for Section 22, which provides that the tenant may pay into court the amount of rent due. Here again, you're stopping the cash flow. And you're stopping the flow of the very thing that provides the housing that you're asking for. And we do not feel that Section 22 should stay in the bill. Now, we also ask that the that Section... I have to find out exactly where it is in the two versions. Section 28, the landlord's lien section, be deleted. We have left out the landlord lien section out of House Bill 2424 for this reason. The Law Improvement Committee, at the direction of this legislative assembly, has created a special subcommittee under Law Improvement, headed by ex-Senator Don Husband from Eugene. They are considering the entire field of liens, not only the landlord's lien, but every other type of lien that's presently provided in Oregon statute. And they are to report to the 1975 legislature. Therefore, we feel it would be much preferable to consider this matter in 1975 after this committee has made their report. Now, I find over in the Section 18A, or on page 18A, on abandonment of personal property, on subsection 5, a public or private sale authorized shall be done under 795040. And there it leaves the situation dangling. Now, we provided in 2424 that a public sale should be held for abandoned personal property. We also added the words that the landlord may dispose of any property in which no bid is made. Supposing there is a sale on the steps of the courthouse that occurs every day and there are no bids on the property, what is the landlord to do with it? Can he give it to Salvation Army? Can he haul it out the dump, or does he have to further store it?
Well, I think Section B will probably take care of that one. In most instances, if there's no bid on it, might.
But that's only
indication that it has no reasonable value.
Well, what have you got? I've had this happen to me, Mr. Chairman. What if you've got some people that leave a house, and they go away, just looks like they've gone to the beach. And here's some furniture, here's some dishes, here's some silverware. You don't want to dispose of it. Maybe they're coming back, and maybe they're not.
Well, doesn't B take care of that?
Not necessarily, because you can destroy or other dispose. Well, there is some value to it. You're not going to dispose of it if there's some value to it, so you have a sale on the steps of the courthouse, and then what do you do with that property? Can you use it for your own uses? Can you haul it out the dump, or can you sell it? We don't think the amendment Now, I know that there are other people wishing to be heard. I will close quickly by saying that we find that the retaliatory eviction section of the amended bill is unacceptable in that it doesn't set out completely the rules. The retaliatory eviction section will be found over on approximately page 19. Under what circumstances, in other words, under what circumstances may a landlord sell the property? Under what circumstances can he recover the property if he really intends to alter it, remodel it, or demolish it? Under what circumstances can he actually take the property for his own use?
Well, you give him 30 days' notice.
Well, the section, the present section, does not point this out.
Page 19A. You got that?
Well, we don't think this covers it. We're talking about all of a sudden the guy wants to have extensive remodeling, or he has sold the property. We would prefer that it
you mean
completely
the
spelled
the
out
owner,
in rules,
the
as
landlord.
We have tried to set them out in our section on retaliatory eviction.
Well, Senator Burns had a question.
Yeah.
You say the guy wants to sell the property.
Yeah.
You mean the landlord?
Yes.
You think he should have less than, the tenant should have less than 30 days' notice?
Well, he'd get 30 days' notice, of course. But the landlord seeks we set out in our section, in our version of 2424, under what conditions he seeks in good faith to recover possession for immediate use as his own abode. In good faith.
Less than 30 days' notice to the tenant?
Oh, no, he'd have to give 30 days' notice, because
that's
other...
Well, provide for any reason. He doesn't
that's
have to give any reason.
If you've got a month-to-month tenancy, he's already covered in present statute as well as this statute.
Some confusion in the law whether that's true or not, isn't it?
Well, he wants to get... We're only talking now about the retaliatory eviction section. If the landlord wants the property for his own use, to live in it himself, then he's not charged with retaliatory eviction. Furthermore, if he wants to tear the place down, if he wants to remodel it, he is not charged for retaliatory eviction. Or if he wants to take it off the market for 6 months, a penalty imposed on him by the Act, he can then get the tenant out without being charged for retaliatory eviction. Also, under what circumstances can rent be raised? We put a section in here under which a rent increase might be. So we will submit these in writing to the committee and ask that you consider putting in the retaliatory eviction section, which you find in House Bill 2424. Now lastly, there's been added to this act under section 35 on page 20, miscellaneous, which practically rewrites the reasons for an FED action. Let me point out that FED, to gain possession of the property, is a summary action. It's been held constitutional in the case of Lindley versus Norbett, decided by the Supreme Court last year, and we feel that all of section 35 should be deleted and that it should be left a summary action for possession. If there'd be no counterclaims allowed under FED, if you have an action for rent, well, certainly there should be some counterclaims. But as far as the actual possession of the property, which is essential to the economic well-being of the owner, that there be no tinkering with the section on FED. As I say, Mr. Chairman, let me just finish, then may I, Senator? All we are saying is that we will submit to the committee all of these suggestions in writing.
Stan, we have a present conflict in our law, FED, a three-day notice, and
yeah,
a standard statute we passed last session, which requires 10 days to be printed on all summons. At least that ought to be resolve this section.
Yes.
Okay.
We hope so.
I think that's important, Mr. Chairman, that somehow that be resolved.
Any other questions?
Chairman, I'm George Keating, rental operator. I'm representing the apartment multifamily council of the Eugene Springfield Home Builders. And I'm somewhat of a disadvantage here insofar as I can, don't feel that I can go into the technicalities of the language of this insofar as I first laid eyes on this about 10 minutes ago.
I know you were not supplied with cop. Mr. Burney and Mr. Church were.
I would like to, in principle, echo Mr. Church's concerns about the content of the bill. In fact, the 2424 is something that we have found to be acceptable in its wording. It is something we can live with. In very fast perusal of this, I find a number of things that have are still in the 159, of course, that we objected to previously, and I believe our testimony is pretty much on record there. With people in our business, we're somewhat akin to the tennis player who has a whole handful of tennis balls thrown at him at once. And it's really rather frightening. You don't know which one to go for. You're trying to catch all of them. As a consequence, we neglect possibly some of the most important things. But our concerns are very real. We are, and I would like to point this out, if you will indulge me, that a law that is apparently written very equitably to handle the problems of landlord and tenant, where there are apparently equal avenues of recourse under the law for a landlord abuse as against a tenant abuse, that the landlord has a built-in disadvantage insofar as that the property owner is always reachable. I might go so far as to say that in case of a dispute with a very bad tenant, and these are the ones that we're talking about, the tenant is seldom reachable. A long drawn out court action is virtually useless. Summary proceedings for removal of a tenant from the premises are virtually the only court action instituted by a landlord against a tenant. So I would plead with you that in considering any legislation in this area, that these basic inequities be taken into consideration, and that at least the rules of the game have some equity in consideration.
Mr. Keating, a lot of the what you're talking about there, where you say that the tenant is unreachable, a lot of the problems that landlords have, if they're willing to get the first and the last month's rent in advance, a lot of what you say there wouldn't be the case, is that right? Because you're holding a whole month's rent then.
This is true. And we have, if I may recount our own transition in the rental business, this has been our desire, to go to an all-lease situation. And under a period of time when vacancy factors are extremely low, this is possible. And you're absolutely right. We have found that we virtually eliminate the bad tenant by requiring a lease first and last and deposit in advance. There is no question about this. But unfortunately, all operators of rental property are not in a position to demand this. More importantly, all tenants are not capable of this. So what do we do with those tenants? If we eliminate them, we've got a bunch of empty places. This we can't stand. So by the very nature of the business, there are going to be risks taken in renting to questionable tenants, those without sufficient resources to even make the first month's rent. And in spite of rumor to the contrary, an awful lot of landlords do have heart. And we try to give the tenant a break. You get slapped down time after time by the dishonest ones. It's a very easy trap for a landlord to fall into, that everybody's out to get me. And that's where the big problems arise, is he's going to get him first. What the answers are is a little beyond me, but I firmly believe that the answer for landlord-tenant relationship is not to make a set of one-sided laws that allows the dishonest tenant to use the law to harass the landlord or to defer payment. And I'm only talking about the dishonest one. And let's face it, there are some on both sides. But when we are in a position where the claim of a wrong can have the same effect on the landlord as if the wrong actually existed, from the standpoint of delaying, keeping a tenant in without being able to collect the rent, these are extremely damaging things without any recourse on a bad claim. These are the things that concern us. The repair and deduct. This personally, if it is administered exactly as the law says, is of no concern to me at all. I have no problem, because I'm going to repair within 14 days or quicker if the conditions warrant. What I am concerned about is the tenant who hears that a tenant can deduct from his rent and that this is allowable under law. So he does this unauthorized, in the improper manner, without written notice, for something that possibly the tenant has caused himself, something that is unnecessary. Then the only recourse for the landlord is court. And believe me, any businessman, yourselves, I'm sure, the last place you want to be is in court.
Well, Mr. Keating, if the tenant does this, in the landlord's opinion, he's abusing the law on that, assuming we have a situation where you don't have a lease, you can give the tenant 30 days notice and kick him out of the premises. And if he says that it's retaliatory and so forth, then it's up to him. Now, all these claims, for the most part, would end up in small claims court. And there'd be no attorneys there unless somebody wanted to remove it to the district court. And then they'd have an attorney. Otherwise, there'd be no attorneys there. And this, I hope you appreciate the fact that we've struggled with this and tried to find a remedy that would be equitable on both sides. We thought of a referee system, some way to mediate these things, keep them out of court. And frankly, it became more complicated than I think what we have now. We have the provision in there that if the prevailing side, the court can award them attorney's fees. And the purpose of that is to discourage either the tenant or the landlord to remove the cause from the small claims court, which is very inexpensive justice. Talking about $4, $2 filing fee, $2 to have it served, and there's no attorney's.
May I make one other observation? First of all, let me state, I have no doubts about the intents and integrity of the people, even on the tenants' side, who are trying to do these things. I am not. I have no. Let's say no doubts about this matter. But I do think that since the small claims court is an extremely good place for things like this to be settled, except it is virtually worthless for anything over $20, particularly if the other party knows he's in the wrong. We don't use it for this very reason. We write them off because it's an exercise in futility. If you go in for more than $20, it is removed. I would suggest to tenant organizations, this legislative session and so on, that, and I realize it's beyond the scope, but an amendment to our national constitution that would provide for small claims court in realistic amounts that would solve most of the problems.
Any other questions, Mr. Keating? Thank you very much, Mr. Keating. Mr. Bernie?
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George Burney. I'm a lawyer from Portland and represent the Oregon Apartment Association. I want to first express the thanks of myself and my client for this opportunity to again appear. I've been a lobbyist for some time. I don't think I've ever been afforded the courtesies that I have to the extent afforded by this committee and being able to again appear and to be given the opportunity to comment on amendments. As Mr. Williamson said, in offering the amendments, which was considered by the committee last week, they were based pretty much on the areas of the testimony and an area in those parts of the bill which weren't affected or touched on by the testimony. They were deleted and left essentially remaining the parts of which there was the greatest burden of complaints by those representing the tenants and in favoring the bill. Now, that may be valid in part, Mr. Chairman, but my client believes that that this bill and the philosophy of it really goes much deeper. We feel that this, admittedly, at the outset, the problem area is that pretty much confined to the tenant who is of low income. Now, I think all of it...
Bernie, Wanda Merrill testified here, we contacted her later, and she said all of her complaints involved middle income. We're talking about $155 and up apart. She said all of hers did. And there were two witnesses that were before the committee that, there were witnesses here in the audience. They didn't testify, and both of those, quite by coincidence, were meetings in Multnomah County where I was, approached me, and they were $175 and so forth type of apartments. And they told me they didn't testify because, and I think they're unduly concerned, about the reaction their landlord might have for them. But so as far as I personally
well, my position is, Mr. Chairman, from what I heard in my own experience, is that the big bulk of the problem arises from the low-income classes, and the solution for their problem by this type of proposal is not any society intervention and helping them out, but to make the solution to the problem pretty much the responsibility of the landlord. For example, in the area of adequacy of the housing, it's state of repair. The tenor of this bill would permit the tenant to make repairs to up to a certain point and deduct the cost of those from the rent. I would suggest, and I think most members of this committee would believe it to be fair, that the criteria of what is and what is not a valid state of repair should be determined by some agency and not just the parties involved and certainly not just the tenant. We feel that the thrust of this type of legislation is sort of an admission of the fact that this legislative assembly or perhaps our federal government, whichever jurisdiction this might lie in, is unable to set up these standards through housing codes and building codes and whatnot to prescribe these standards and to enforce them. And so the enforcement then, for want of a society approved method, is given into the hands of the landlord. He himself can enforce them by his own rent and deduct provisions. We think that this is the basic philosophy of the bill, which has not been answered by the amendments. We think that the amendments really promote the continuation of this type of legislation. We think that this is a problem of society and not the problem alone of the landlord. We think that the areas of the low-income families, which high rent is going to be an economic disaster to them, and similarly to the landlord, to those people who, if receiving no rent, is going to be faced also with economic disaster. We do not think that this bill is going to promote it. We're going to promote better housing. We think it's going to have an adverse effect with respect to it.
Any questions, Mr. Purdy? Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
What do we have on the agenda? SB 159 is on our agenda Thursday for work session. And of course, we got other matters that are going to be on our agenda tomorrow morning. And we're at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
8 o'clock
tomorrow morning. And there are no other witnesses signed up. If anybody here testify, other than those signed up, okay. The meeting is adjourned. I appreciate the committee coming this morning. We had 100% attendance.
To order. Stan, I'll need the first three pages that we wrote, the first three pages that Charlie prepared.
The ones you prepared of last week?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, may I bring Mr. Jensen up to him?
Not, I would rather not bring somebody else in on these discussions now at this stage. On these first three pages, sometimes in our discussion you're saying that it didn't make much difference and so forth. Now, I'd like to know, do you feel that these amendments, these first three pages are important and do you desire them?
Yes, I think we're all agreed on that.
Okay, I'm moving. All right, it's been moved that the amendments on the first three pages, one of them has already been adopted, that's, I think, in the
original
page. Yeah, on page 10B, we deleted which are structurally sound last time. But the rest of these amendments on the first three pages have been moved. Is there any discussion? All those, Charlie?
Just one error. The bottom number on the second page should be a 6 instead of an 8.
Where? The last line?
Yeah.
That should be on page 6, you say?
Yeah, it should be a 6. Insert 6 instead of... on page 8, delete line, delete 2 and insert 6. I think it says 8.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah, those... No. No.
don't read it here, but now.
Page 8, line 12.
These are the ones that we can't record, but.
Well, that wouldn't be right.
3 and 4.
Page 8, line 12, you got a print 3 there now.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
All I have is page 1 and 2 of the March 29th amendment.
Here, Carl Burns will.
Charlie? Have you got a minute?
Okay, here we go.
Charlie?
Yes, sir.
Page 12, line 8. I see you mean over there, delete
the amended bill, Mr. Chairman. The amended bill.
This is the withhold.
The hand and growth bill. You mean, over there after subsection?
Yes.
That should be 8, or 6, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay, as amended, then, we'll make that change for part of your motion.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Is there any further discussion?
Of this.
All those in favor of adopting the first 3 pages of amendments dated March 29, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, they're adopted. Norm, there have been discussions on that repair and deduct, which you were concerned about, other members. Did you have a motion on that, Senator Carson?
Yeah, move on page 4 of the...
Hand and growth?
Well, Charlie Williamson. I'm working off that.
Page 4?
Yeah. He has... I'd like to try it. Right here. Well, let's see. I guess it's on the marked up bill of each line, page 14, line 9 of the amended bill.
Page 14.
That's the repair and deduct. There's a strong feeling on both sides on this one, and this is a focal point of the of 159. In order to, my understanding is I've talked with Mr. Church, and they don't, the landlords do not buy the concept at all, so I know this won't please them, and it may not please the tenants either, but I move the, to, on line 11, I guess it is, to reduce that to $50. Right now it's $100.
That's the amendment.
Well, there, and then I'm going to have another one over here where it says if the landlord fails to comply within 14 days after being notified in writing, I'll move that to 30. So it's reducing the amount that can be set off in half to $50, and it's in effect doubling the time the landlord has to make the repair before the set-off can be used against him.
Yeah, the motion is to, on line 11 of page 14 of the bill, change $100 to $50. And on line 15, on the same page, change 14 days to 30 days. Is that correct?
That's right.
Is there discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
As I understand the amendment on of the Charlie Williamson March 29, it would delete section 20. Is that correct?
That's on page 4. That is not... it says at the top of that, the following amendments were not agreed upon. These were disputed areas.
I think it's safe to say the landlords would uniformly, unanimously want section 20 removed, and the tenants, or those who represent the tenants, to the contract.
Is there any further discussion?
Now that's on page 11, 50 and 30.
Right.
50.
Well, page 14, then.
Page 14.
Yeah. All right, those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Well,
gotta get your horses here.
Did you have another amendment, Senator Meeker?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that we delete Section 20.
All right, been moved that Section 20 be deleted from the bill. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Okay, that motion
fails.
I know. Tony, let me ask you something. If you're opposed to any of this and we can't discuss a compromise, why?
Mr. Chairman, the whole concept of repairing a duck just bothers me. To require, you know, to request in a contract the concept that, well, if I don't like something, I'm just going to fix it, really troubles me, because I think it violates the entire principle of contractual arrangements between people.
Well, but my recollection of the testimony of Tony was that the result has been that when the tenants would ask to have something repaired, you recall I had quite a bit of testimony, including Representative Katz, that the landlord said, you don't like it, move.
Well,
and this is some remedy. It's $50 is a lot. The landlord can give notice after that time if he wants to, once he gets rid of the tenant.
Well, if the rent's anywhere close to $100, that's half the rent.
That's right.
And that could go on for 6 or 8 months.
Well, what about this?
And then you really got problems.
What about this? What about an amendment that say that it could not be the amount equal greater than one half of the rent and could only be done once in any quarter?
Well, I guess I'm going to have to be your no vote, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Bye. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, you know how I feel.
Yeah.
But I would rather see it deleted, but I think there are two sides of this situation. There's both the landlord, there's the tenant. And I was willing to compromise. Spoke to you at length about it, but I would vote no on the way it was. But I feel that there's some area in here that between the landlord and the tenant, there's some compromise, and I thought this was a pretty good. I like the only
is there anything else
once a year or something in there, but
yeah,
I think this was pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Wally,
mm-hmm.
Not finding you, but I just want to know how to go out and get some more horses in here. If we're in a position that if we adopted this way, I would then entertain a motion to send it to the floor to pass recommendation. But these amendments, do you, is the bill satisfactory?
Well, there's some more we got to talk about.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead.
There's one other thing,
okay,
too.
Let's go to these other, any others.
The other one here should be on line 12. I forgot.
Line 12?
Of page 14, a periodic rent, whichever amount is less. Norm brought that up, or
okay.
Tony did, that if it's greater, if the fellow's rent is 250, he could set off 100 and a quarter.
Yeah.
If I read that, and I didn't want that, so that would be part
okay.
of my motion.
Right.
It failed anyway. The next part of disagreement was on page 15, line 18. We ignored that one, and we adopted the safety hazard. That's okay, and that was out. We didn't fight much about that one. The problem here is, as I understand it, and Charlie or Stan correctly, but allowing the defenses of the Landlord-Tenant Act to be raised in an FED, or Forcible Entry and Detainer. I'm kind of persuaded, Mr. Chairman, that the FED statute does need some remodeling, and I'm not so sure that I don't think I'd ever recommend to a client that he use a Forcible Entry and Detainer, because it has a lot of problems with it. But I'd like to see us perhaps leave the landlord this FED thing. There's another part about it, and I mentioned it to the committee, and that is that our uniform statute we adopted in judiciary 2 years ago requires each summons to say 10 days. You have 10 days. An FED, you haven't got 10 days, you've got 3 days. And we got a little consumer problem there. The citizen gets a printed form that says he has 10 days, but as a matter of fact, he only has three, and the statutes are in conflict. So that ought to be fixed, and I'm inclined to think that the recommendation, I believe, be the landlords to strip the raising of FED defenses, raising the landlord-tenant defenses from an FED action, be taken out of this bill. But I'd like to see us take a good look at that
and the home question of FED, and I realize that it's not a dilatory thought on my part. I realize we're getting short of time, but that's my feeling. So the effect of it would be to concur with the recommendation here to delete the section
22.
Yeah, section 22. Now,
do you have other amendments besides these?
Well, these are the four hot spots that I've talked both with Charlie and Stan.
Well,
the next two, the next one will abolish the landlord lien. Two things about that. My understanding is Law Improvement is studying the landlord lien. And also, Mr. Church provided me an excerpt from a case by Justice Rossman, which indicated even if we knock the landlord lien out, the old common law remedy of restraint is still available. So I'd like to work to get the landlord lien out, but I think we'd raise a little mischief here if we did it in this bill for two reasons. One, it may go out anyway by Law Improvement. And two, according to this Oregon Supreme Court case, the law of restraint, which is common law, is still there. So if we'd want to get rid of it, we'd have to do more than deleting the landlord lien. We'd actually have to affirmatively, as I understand the law, prohibit the landlord lien. And I don't know we want to take those steps.
Well, my understanding is that this has been held, such a provision has been held unconstitutional in several state courts. Is that correct, Charlie?
In several, not in Oregon, but several federal courts.
Federal courts, were they?
Yes.
Now, what about what about the common law remedy? Would there be a common law remedy?
The bill specifically abolishes the strain in Oregon.
It does. If we left that language in, it would be.
Yes, yes.
Page 28.
No.
Yeah, there.
I didn't think there was a big question on this because of these court decisions. And also, the things were unworkable anyway.
Section. Well, I go along with you on that. I think the question really is, do we want to abolish it or do we want to let the Law Improvement Committee take a look at it and make a study of it? That's good. I would agree with you. I would not recommend a client, if I had one, on a landlord, to use the exercise of landlord. It's not a very good remedy. It's dangerous.
Mr. Senator
John Burns, you already picked it up. That's the one Charlie mentioned.
We got that.
Page 2 of our amendment.
Yeah, we got that, Stan.
Yeah.
That should be 6 rather than 8, right?
Rather than 16. On the last page.
On the last page? Oh. All
right. Page 5, where it says on page 23, delight 1 through 16, that should be 6. These are Charlie's, and they, what deal Charlie?
Okay, on page 23, delete lines 1 through, should be what?
6 instead of 16.
Charlie, if you're going to do our work for us, you should be a little more accurate.
I picked that up off the stand amendments, I think.
Room 319. Okay, that's where Jern stays. Let's be in recess for about 5 minutes. Okay.
Appreciate it if you
yep.
do it expeditiously.
We will.
Recess?
It looks starting on page back on page 4 of the amendments. We're hung up on what amounts to repairing the duct.
On page 4 on the amendments.
Yeah, on the amendments. I would move the effect of my motion is to, for all practical purposes, is to leave FED the way it is and not have Landlord-Tenant Act interfere with FED, and that's quite a philosophical
yeah,
change.
Yeah, it's on
too.
One page. That's section
20. That's section
22.
Starts
22.
With.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to adopt these amendments. That's the effect of what I'd, Charlie, if I adopted the amendments on the bottom of page 4, the and the rest of them would be effectively taking FED, Landlord and Tenant Act, basically was to soften or block FED. And if we took all reference to FED out of the bill, we'd start by adopting the bottom line of page 4, is that right?
Well, yeah, the bottom of page 4, then the last three on page 5.
Okay, that would be my
motion.
The
last four on page 5.
Okay, you heard the yes, Charlie.
I just say, I don't think those amendments necessarily would do it, though. For example, those refer to this act to govern notice and termination of tenancies, and I think you do want that to apply to FED proceedings.
Well, I want to solve the problem you and I talked about notice, what period of time is summer.
Yeah, and I mean, that act, I mean, the act, as it governs termination of tenancies, would have to apply. Also, the bottom of page 15, that's not section 41, it's section 34. These were copied from
the
church's
amendment.
Are you talking about the 15, the bill, page 15?
Yes.
And what are you saying?
Well, the last line of the amendment says sections 1 to 42 of the Act. We haven't had 42 sections of the Act for 2 weeks. We're down to... Our assistants are having a hard time.
Well, on page 15 of the bill, I don't see.
No, I'm sorry. It's on page 4 of Charlie's amendment.
Right.
Yeah. Right at the bottom.
That
bottom
should
line.
Be
35.
35. 35, I think.
Just
35.
34.
35.
Yeah, well, number 41 should be 35.
Number 42 should be
35. Number 41
should be 34. Number 40. Charlie. Charlie. Hey, Charlie. Get to page 4 of your amendment, okay?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Okay, on the bottom there you have sections 1 to 42.
That should be 35, but go up 4 lines
right.
In the middle of the page, you'll see a section 41. Charlie says should be section 34. Up 4 lines to the bottom.
Okay. 41 should be what?
34.
Okay.
42
should be
34. Well, what I'll do then, Mr. Chairman, I'll move to take reference to... FED out, and in my motion was also permission to, if we could, between Dean and Charlie and I, put together a separate bill on FED to, and legislative council, take this aspect out of it.
No defenses of it.
I think that's extremely important. The question ought to be decided on whether or not we want FED. And I'm reasonably confident how I vote on the matter, but the problem really is that if you allow all the defenses and the offsets, the FED is based primarily on gaining possession, with an opportunity to hassle about who owes what to whom at some later date. And if you allow, in my view, we're effectively repealing FED, I think, by adopting the bill in its present form. If that's what the committee wants to do, then leave them in, but I think that's kind of... I don't know if that's what the committee wants to do. I'd rather see us put it in a separate bill so we can debate the issue of whether we want forcible entry and detainer in Oregon. If we don't want it, then we'll take it out. If we do want it, then we'll take it out. And that's... I'm not sure whether as Charlie said, whether all these amendments do that, but that's the front of my proposal.
Well, I have an impression that by doing that, Wally is really gutting the bill to a very great extent. Okay. Do you feel that way, Charlie?
I'm listening, yeah.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Okay, the motion fails.
Okay,
Chairman. You have one other one that you didn't
make. There are two more. For the landlord liens, I don't really have any strong feelings about it. I don't like the landlord lien, but my initial preference would be to leave it until the law improvement committee can resolve it. There seems to be some sort of disagreement whether it's Oregon law or not Oregon law. I'm not very skilled in the area, and I have no strong feelings about it. I don't care to move to delete it. That's page 5 of the bill. Where it says on page 828, I think it should be page 18, line 21 of the amendment bill, delete all of section 28. And that's effectively deleting the landlord tenant.
Are you moving that?
No.
So wait, just move it until we catch up with it.
Page 18 of the marker.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, that again, you know, there's been a lot of discussion in this session of the legislature about efficiency judgments, and we've all heard everyone say that they don't work. We've heard the same philosophical approach commented about landlord liens, that they don't work. But it is a tool. And I'd hate to see us move away as rapidly as we're moving away from those kind of tools that are encompassed in this bill. You know, one of the ways to do something is to develop a new concept and try it on for a while and see if it works, rather than changing your whole approach all at once without knowing whether or not it's going to work. And I think this is one of those areas that we ought to leave it in. So I move to delete page 18, lines 21 through 23. Delete section 28.
I beg your pardon?
That would delete section 28.
Is there further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. Okay, the motion fails. All right. Any other motions?
Let me just 19A and FEB.
Section 19A.
The next one on page 5 of our Charlie's amendments, it says delete all the language of 19A. I think that's Charlie. Is that your recommendation, Charlie?
No, that was the language you wanted put in the bill.
Well, that's not in the bill.
No, that's the language that you suggested we put in and was adopted by the committee.
Oh, okay.
Page 19A, to make the 30-day notice effective from the date that it's given.
Ah, okay.
Well, wait a minute. That's not 19A, is it?
Page 19A.
Page 19A, okay. Yeah, we adopted that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. So, Charlie's suggesting...
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Page 19A is not in the form of a bill, but it's in the form of an amendment.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes.
And that's Charlie's objection. We put in to make very sure that you have 30 days notice in writing from...
Well, what part of the bill are we amending?
Well, it's line 9 of the previous bill. the previous page.
Mr. Church wanted this amendment, and I said I didn't agree to it.
Oh. It's already adopted.
It's already adopted, right.
Okay.
This was one of his amendments.
Well, the other thing was to clear up what we thought was a legal question as to what the law really is.
So we'll just leave it in, and I won't make any motion, and that has the effect of leaving it in.
practice for the
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, it looks like the issues in our, when we can get a committee together.
Wait just a minute. What about this last one?
That's part of the FED. Mm-hmm. Do we all agree that the, on page 20, page 21, 22, and 23 all fall in the FED? The three questions then are repair and deduct.
Landlord lien and FED.
I thought you had one other one earlier that you didn't move. Discuss. Am I wrong? This morning.
You've already adopted the first one, which...
That was the 50 and 30.
Yeah, that's... Well, the one we above adopted. It, we've adopted, and the one above that, we have... The first recommendation, we left that. We ignored that. The second recommendation, we adopted. The third recommendation was prepare and deduct, and we're hung up on that one.
Senator Burns and Senator Jones said that they would come after the witness testimony.
Chairman, what was this? When you look at 10B, why did they take out J?
Well, they substituted the language safety from the hazards of fire. We substituted that language for it.
Chairman, I'll hang tough on my votes if you want to, whatever they are. Sexual base, I gotta go. So when people come.
So your vote isn't gonna be to pass it out anyway, right?
Well,
Mr. Chairman,
how it goes.
Before we pass it out, you know, this bill, perhaps I'm a little bit slow this morning, but it appears to me that you've got amendment language in it that's encompassed in the bill, and I'd like to see it engrossed back at this committee before we pass it out, because I think we're going to have some problems with what you do.
Well, the bill's got to be engrossed. The point is that I would like to get a consensus of the committee if we got the votes to send the thing out. There's no sense of having it engrossed if in
bond agree,
and if it's not going to go out anyway. But we could, if we got the horses to get it out, let's kick it out, but with the understanding the bill is going to come back to committee with, after it's engrossed, not to change the concepts, but any of the technical changes that the committee may want to consider.
Okay.
Chairman, who took this J out?
We substituted, didn't we?
We substituted the word safety from the
hazards
of fire.
Well, I don't think that makes your what you want to do with it.
Well, the argument by the landlords, Norm, on that was that they saw some enforcing safety codes and so forth through this bill, and they have objected to those areas of the bill generally.
Hell, that's just the same law that's in effect in every... If you're going to... Well, if it's in other places, what are we putting back in safety from hazards of fire for? You're just jumping from the... And this says the code and health and safety.
Well, when we get the quorum here, Senator Howard, you want to move that back in, why?
I can't see why any reasonable landlord would not want to comply with the health and safety fire and health and safety codes.
Mr. Chairman, they're not going to object to it anyway, Norm. I mean, you've got a fire code. It's a... This bill wouldn't be needed if the city of Portland would enforce their existing codes. You know that as well as I do.
Well, but you got little...
Look, we can't even get the fire marshal to come in here and run out the extra number of people that are in this room on occasion.
Well, you could have had the right fire marshal to shut this damn thing down.
Well, you see my point.
They have fire in one or the other.
Let's wait. Okay, we're adjourned.
I know they're going
to... Tomorrow morning, 8:00.